You are listening to Lukua Palestinia, the Palestinian radio program from Montreal, CKUT 90.3 FM, on the internet www.ckut.ca. Robert Silverman, an activist from Montreal and also a frequent guest and contributor to the Palestinian radio program on CKUT, left with a group of Montrealers to visit the West Bank and Gaza to see for himself the situation in the Palestinian cities and towns. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you, Joseph.
You are safe and everything is okay?
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell us about the trip then.
Well, the trip was quite painful, but very, very interesting. And we were able to get a true picture of the situation. Some of the things we saw right from the beginning were the checkpoints. The building of the fence in the northern frontier, as well as very sad information about the prisoners, which bothered me a very, very great deal. There are 2,000 or so Palestinian prisoners in 4 Israeli prisons, and the classification has not even been completed. That is to say, families don't know where their relatives are. They're badly treated. There's one toilet for 60 people. They're badly closed. They're badly fed. They're apparently in a situation of great degradation. And this information was given to us by Jewish Israeli lawyers from a group called the Defense of the Individual. That was perhaps the worst thing we saw or heard about. And we also saw checkpoints, and we met Palestinians, generally well-educated Palestinians who lived in Bethlehem or Ramallah, and they could not go to work anymore because of the closures. They could not leave Bethlehem, for example. Mm-hmm. And this was most unacceptable.
Well, tell us, what cities did you visit?
We visited the following cities. Uh-huh. We visited East Jerusalem, okay, the old city. Uh-huh. We visited next Ramallah. The next day we visited Hebron, Bethlehem, and Jenin. Those were the Palestinian cities.
Where you were depressed the most when you
in Jenin?
In Jenin. Why?
Well, because in Jenin we saw the remains of the refugee camp, which was bulldozed for 3 days in April.
Tell us how you felt when you went in, and what did you see exactly?
We saw houses, and then a big space between the three-story houses, and there were piles of rubble, and I took some clothes. In fact, I should have brought it. I took some clothes out of the rubble, which showed that the Palestinians living there had no chance to remove their clothes, and the bullet was bulldozed off at night by a fellow named Moshe Nissen, who confessed to it how much he enjoyed it. And this was perhaps the most depressing thing, that why human beings would destroy the homes of other human beings who were perhaps sleeping, or who had already been the children of people who were expelled in 1948.
Well, it's
that
was
a big, it was like a football
orders,
field.
Army orders. I mean, he was part of the army, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was part of the army, but he was drunk. He had one hand on the bulldozer and one hand on the bottle of scotch.
He enjoys his work very much.
Yeah, and some people in the army would not do that. Mm-hmm. But he seemed to. He was kind of a.
Tell us about the checkpoint.
And then and also in answer to your question, we also we saw the fence being built on the Palestinian Israeli border, pre-67,
right,
and the theft of destruction of olive trees, and the impossibility of the villagers to go to their land because it was now cut off by the fence in construction. And third, which affected us personally, is in our trip to the northern border, Ben Hill, I forget the town, there was a tank on the road, an abandoned tank, so we had to take a secondary road. And on the secondary road, there was a big earth piles, so we couldn't pass, and we had to drive through the olive trees, within the olive trees, and instant roads, which finally, after much difficulty, brought us to this town. So we had three very painful experiences in Jenin.
Is it easy to go from these back roads? You don't meet any of the Israeli
checkpoints? No, we didn't meet any Israeli checkpoints just getting into and out of Jenin. But we got a flat tire. The road was so bad, and we were going actually literally through the olive trees. Fortunately, it was dry and it was possible. And there were other Palestinian trucks and cars who were also using, and Palestinians would point out which way to go between which route between the olive trees.
How was the treatment of the Palestinians in this trip?
Well, it depended. In the first checkpoint, a lot of Palestinians know that they can't get through.
Okay.
So what the Palestinians did from, say, Jerusalem to Ramallah, they'd arrive at the checkpoint in a taxi, and since the car was taking a lot of space and they really didn't need it, then you'd get out and you would walk maybe 300 meters, and then you would cross into the Ramallah area. I think it was called Kira. Very negligent. They didn't check the bags. They didn't check our bags. They didn't seem to check the Palestinians' bags. It was more collective punishment and harassment. Worse than the checkpoints were the flying checkpoints. That is to say, we went into Ramallah in the morning. There was no checkpoint. There was apparently an incident in Tel Aviv that day, and they put an extra checkpoint, or two extra checkpoints, between Ramallah and Jerusalem, which delayed us about 30 minutes. And worse than the checkpoints are the earth on the road, which made it very difficult to get into Bethlehem from Hebron, and very difficult to get into Hebron.
And tell us about Hebron. Did you go to Hebron?
We went to Hebron.
Uh-huh.
There was a curve. Now, we had trouble getting in because there was no checkpoint. We used Israeli-only a road because we had a Jerusalem, an Israeli license plate from a taxi of a Palestinian Israeli. And so then we finally got in, and there was a curfew in Hebron. So there was no one in the street. There was a few children who sold us a hat. And then we were met by the Christian peacekeepers team, and we walked with them, and we saw a Palestinian cameraman and journalist who had 9 bullets, and he showed us. And then we went to the settlement, and there were snipers
in Hebron 2. Like this 9 bullets and this photographer. Or journalist, was he in the hospital or was he?
No. He just showed us his body.
Oh, he was out.
Yeah.
Oh, he survived.
They were in his arms, and you know, they're not in his stomach. They were mostly around where he held the camera.
Oh, but he survived
the
bullets.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we walked near where the 400 Jewish settlers are, because
And then
one came across the street and said Nazi to us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we visited the mosque. Everyone gets searched like in airports to get into the mosque. And the Christian peacekeepers were really good, pointed out that a lot of the stores had been vandalized and destroyed by the Israeli Jewish settlers. A lot of them are from New York, it seems. Have been destroyed, and many of the 30,000 Palestinians who live in Hebron too have moved because of the constant harassments of the settlers.
Mm-hmm. Robert, tell me, you went to Ramallah and you met Yasser Arafat, President Yasser Arafat?
Yes, we met with the President.
Tell us about what did you see in
Mukatta? In the Mukatta, there was
seven large
four-story buildings, and they were all destroyed, and one of them was left, actually maybe one and a half, and we arrived to meet Chairman Arafat, and the security was very lax, so we had to put our baggage outside, but we could take cameras and tape recorders. So we went upstairs, there were a lot of it seemed to be bodyguards, and there were other visitors. And after a wait of only 15 minutes, not even that long, we were ushered into Chairman Arafat's office.
Mm-hmm.
And he greeted us very warmly. We all shook his hand. And he said three things. He said he doesn't very much wanted us to tell the truth and inform the people and try to change the Canadian government's politics. But he also said, why can we not get international protection? He said Nablus has been destroyed in the middle, in an old city, under curfew for 100 days. And he said, why is Iraq being attacked for not following UN resolutions? And why is Israel not being criticized? Why is the UN not there like in Bosnia or Kosovo to protect the Palestinians, who certainly need protection from the Israeli occupation and the incursions, constant incursions, and the curfews, and the restrictions on movement and the detention of the prisoners, as well as periodic house destructions. So he posed the question, why it's so, and asked us to do our part in asking Canada to vote for United Nations resolutions to send an international body to protect the Palestinians. So that was it. It wasn't very long. And there was a delegation of French mayors, one mayor who was also in the room. He looked kind of tired.
Mm-hmm.
He looked very tired. Well,
Robert, I want to thank you very much for this interview, and I'm glad you are back and safe. I was talking to Robert Silverman, a pro-Palestinian activist from Montreal, and also a frequent guest and contributor to the Palestinian radio program on CKUT.